I see it cannot look unless
there's something wrong with my watch. And the program that I'm having is saying we should be kicking off at 10. But I realize that people are trying to get something to either drink or bite this morning. So can we agree that we will get plus minus 3 minutes to get whatever you want so that we have a working session? Thank you very much.
You know when you go so the moment of the step is
I want to believe that we can continue like we agreed. Allow me to start by apologizing for our chairperson. When she phoned me, she was on her way to Rome, and she told me that she was trying to postpone this to Wednesday, but it was not possible because of the heavy schedule that we're having around here. She requested me to fill in for her. Thus, you are stuck with me for the day. to start this meeting, I will ask us, I'm checking if you are all seated, I will ask us to start it perhaps a little bit different today by, no, by observing, yeah, that's it. Everybody will be doing that, but we're not like praying from here. So I'll allow everyone of us to, I'm humbly requesting us to stand up and have that moment of silence so that you can communicate with your God. Let's do that. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. On the agenda here, I see only 3 items. I'm informed that the first one will be dealt with by the Department of Education, and the last two will be for the committee. It's briefing by the department on its program of action. The second one is regulations related to the prohibition of the payment of unauthorized remuneration or the giving of financial benefits or benefits in kind to certain state employees. And the third one is consideration of proposed 5-year plan program. Now, before we do that, I'll ask Vivian to introduce the department personnel. After that, we will introduce ourselves from Parliament. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you,
Chair.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm the Dean Carnister, the DG, the Office of the DG. I'm accompanied today by Dr. Wilson Makalatese on my left. He's the Chief Director for Strategic Coordination and Planning. Also on my left, Ms. Simone Geyer, Chief Director for Education and Human Resource Management. On my right, I have the Branch Coordinator in the Office of the DG, Ms. Vicky Kenyani. Our parliamentary liaison officers are present as well, Ms. Kavakazi, Ms. Kasamba, as well as Ms. Kedanda, and Ms.
Thank you very much. Could we get the rest of us introducing themselves? I'm not starting here. Could we start from my left? Yeah. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Chairperson. This is Honorable Annelie Mda from the Congress of the People.
Wow, thank you.
Mamuluko Kemsanu Kubai, African National Congress.
Thank you.
Donald Smiles from the Democratic Alliance.
Thank you.
AC Mashishi, African National Congress.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Silence Makurana, ANC.
Thank you.
Mama Lungelo Kina, ANC.
Thank you. Foni Mushwana, ANC. And from the department, I'm glad that you brought Simone, because Simone and I have come a long way. Thank you. Over to the department. Sorry, I forgot. This is not the department.
Hanif Hussein, Independent Democrat.
Thank you.
Dennis Bandi, Content Advisor.
Okay, thanks.
Cyril and Dudley, ACDP.
Thank you.
I'm Alfred Bojan from the Kingdom.
Of course, isn't it? And ANC. I know, thank you. And the gentleman next to you was also introduced, am I right?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
So back to the department,
Vivian.
Thank
you. Our members today, we have quite a detailed presentation, and so I'm asking to do that. Now, we're taking 2.6.
Honourable members, I'll take you through the presentation. We have quite a number of slides, but I will be galloping through some of them and also taking you through the programme of action, which you have had a copy of in advance, together with a copy of the medium-term strategic framework, which forms the bedrock of the programme of action as developed by the Human Development Cluster. I will also point out during the course of the presentation some of those elements that have emerged in the process of further consultation with the Presidency in the planning and the monitoring and evaluation units within the Presidency, which have given further detail to the Department for implementation in the next cycle, but also in preparation during this cycle for 2010. And I'll come to those sections later. The version of the program of action, which has been distributed in advance, is the one which is published on the government website and is the signed off copy by all of the ministers of the Human Development Cluster. We trust that some of our concerns around some of the elements within this particular program of action, which have in a sense almost been overtaken by events, that will also be clarified in the development of the new program of action for the next cycle. In terms of our approach as a human development cluster, we looked at the signed-off medium-term strategic framework with a core theme of doing more and better, laying the foundations for the work of the Department of Basic Education. At the time of development, we were still working as two departments under the banner of the Department of Education. In terms of the transitional phase, you will see that there are a number of references here, which I will not speak to today, and obviously the Committee for Higher Education will give more attention to the detail of that, but I will focus together with the team here today on those elements that are specifically for the mandate of the Department of Basic Education. Just as an aside, we are often in the senior management meetings being reminded that we are also employed as members of the Department of Education, and then technically until the two departments settle, we're going to have this kind of transitional awkwardness with whether we speak for DBE or whether we're speaking for higher education. In some instances, our services are full cross-cutting, and we render services to both ministries. We'll be guided by you, Chair, to make sure that we stay on the path of basic education and that we don't waste the time of the committee with anything that's additional to the mandate. I'd like to proceed now to look at the basis that the medium-term strategic framework lays for the development of the program of action. We saw that with our fourth democratic election, our electoral mandate was defined by our strategic objectives and targets for the period 2009 to 2014. This MTFF builds on the successes of our 15 years of democracy, and it also outlines those medium-term strategies for the improvement in the conditions of the lives of all South Africans. The MTSF base document serves as a guide to the planning as well as to the resource allocation across all of the spheres of government. So when we look at our particular work that we are doing as a department, we have to be guided by government's key priorities, but also be realistic in our planning so that we plan within our means and within the means of government more broadly. And there lies the challenge. We will need to develop our ongoing five-year strat plans and our budget requirements, taking into account all of these medium-term imperatives. So the MTSF is informed largely by that electoral mandate. It also takes account of how particular conditions, both globally and locally, will influence and possibly change those elements within the MTSF over time, depending on the means and resources available. Whilst weighing up all of these trade-offs and making the choices, the 15-year review, as well as the scenario planning process, was taken into account in the development of the MTSF. Also, the challenge of new organizational mechanisms, which have been represented by setting up the National Planning Commission in the presidency, as well as all the corresponding and related structures, influence the way in which the priorities have been presented, both in the MTSF and, as you will find, in the work in the development of the POA for all of the clusters of government. Further, also based on this MTSF is a corresponding medium-term expenditure framework, which will be developed also as time allows, in terms of those broader imperatives that inform expenditure trends within government planning. This MTSF will also be reviewed annually at the mid-year Canvas Mahotla, and also take account of all the new developments and the experiences of actual implementation and challenges which inform that. The yearly reviews will also inform the three-year rolling plan for the MTF as well as government's annual program of action. So in developing the targets for 2014, the account also had to be taken of the UN Millennium Development Goals and our responsibility as a country to strive towards those goals. South Africa, therefore, would, where possible, will contribute to the attainment of all of these goals, both within the broader African context and further afield as we engage in international platforms. All of the priorities contained in the MTSF require equal attention. There's no one priority that stands above any of the others. But the one that concerns us most importantly is government's identification of education as a primary societal aspect of government priorities, as well as that of the planning and the rollout of our POA. So the strategic focus of this framework as a whole must be taken into account, because it relates broadly to issues of economic growth and development. It also includes the creation of decent work, and on a large scale, the investment in quality education and skills development, which is our particular preoccupation. This, however, all of this constitutes the centre of government's approach. I don't want to go into too much detail around the electoral mandate. I'm speaking to the converter. I think all of you sitting here understand that. And in terms of the MTSF, there's a clear identification of those objectives. I think the critical one for us, I will come to when we deal with the details of the program of action itself. But I think the broader challenge, especially for education as a lead department, and here I speak of education as the combined two departments in a sense, is responsible largely for driving the human resource development strategy for South Africa. And that is embedded in this presentation. Whilst I won't speak to it in absolute detail, because it's the lead department would be higher education and training, and but as we constitute both general education and further education in schools, it is a key component of the broader human resource development strategy for the country. And for that reason, we should keep it on, you know, in our minds as we move through the presentation today. The priority areas in terms of the strategic objectives include both the issues of economic growth, economic and social infrastructure, rural development, food security, land reform, access to quality education, improved healthcare, fight against crime and corruption, as well as developing cohesive and sustainable communities, amongst others. Again, I'm just going to move very quickly into the basic thrust and the focus of the MTSF. Given all of the new challenges which arise from the changes in our global economic environment and the current economic climate globally, I think that we need to begin to identify quite clearly how education contributes to elevating our programs and taking the nation along with us into developing the country's productive capacity, as well as looking at jobs and poverty reduction measures. Here, the backdrop of the war on poverty, the anti-poverty strategies of the department, as well as that of government more broadly, are elements embedded within the program of action that are meant to focus our attention on ensuring that the poor benefits from our initiatives, and that we ensure that all of our poverty alleviation strategies are more visible to communities out there. And we'll come to the detail of that later. The background to our human development cluster work in terms of developing this program of action is that with the social cluster having been reorganized by the new administration, the following two clusters have been established, and there may even be contested areas within other clusters that also once belonged within the social cluster, but the two primary ones that have emerged from this have been human development, where education finds itself as one of the two lead departments along with health, and then the social protection and community development cluster. Both these clusters have been combined and they report to the Cabinet Committee for the Social Protection, Community and Human Development. In fact, there's a session happening right now where the ministers of that particular cluster are meeting with DGs to unpack the various programs of action and to take progress reports from each of the DGs. The three key areas in the human development cluster are firstly to strengthen the skills and the human resource base, secondly to improve the health profile of society, and thirdly to build cohesive, caring and sustainable communities. I just want to note here that this particular presentation, as I said at the outset, will focus solely on the Department of Basic Education's contribution within this the broader POA which you have before you. In terms of the first point, we were identified as the fourth strategic priority within the MTSF, but within the human development cluster, gaining further priority within the broader program of action around education being a central government program, the strengthening of skills and the human resource base constitutes the first key action in this particular program of action. The first point, and here my numbering on screen will not, I have not numbered it as you have in front of you, but I will be working sequentially through each of the steps of the program of action that you have before you, the one in landscape, which has all of the departments listed, as well as the target dates. The time frame for this particular program of action, members, is for March 2010. This being the transitional period during which the alignment of the new departments together with the MTSF cycle is what constitutes almost an interim set of deadlines. Most of these are also linked to the longer term rollout in terms of Millennium Development Goals and other aspects of the particular period. But I want to assure you that the detail of that will only really be expanded upon when we get to the new POA, which we'll be actively working towards in the last quarter of this year. So if you want to refer to that document along with my slides, then you'll be able to note your particular questions around that as we go along. So in terms of the first one, to create a culture of achievement and improving learner outcomes with an overall improvement in key subjects like mathematics and science constitutes that first key action. The targets include conducting national assessments at grades 3, 6, and 9, and to report on those results. One of the key indicators here would be that assessments would be conducted in those grades, and in grades 3 and 6 especially, and that the results will be published and made available to schools, not necessarily published in the press as we see with the grade 12 results. Now the target is to train maths and science teachers and to provide additional resources to Dinaleli schools, and there are 500 of those schools. The key targets here would be to increase the number of maths and science classes in grade 12, and also in terms of the maths target, 50,000 passes, and in Dinaleli schools, 24%. Another action there would be to provide support to matric learners and to see an increased number of candidates both writing and passing the national senior certificate. Again, one of the actions here is to increase participation in and to improve the quality of early childhood development services through the implementation of the Foundation for Learning Guidelines for both resourcing and delivery of grade R, and a target of 100 model grade R classes being established as in set. A further action here would be to expand access to and expand the capacity of secondary education with a view to increasing enrollment rates, and that to ensure that more young people are able to access and to complete their secondary education. Here, a particular concern is to ensure that we have a retention rate that is much higher than it currently is. We are hoping that with ensuring that there are other support mechanisms in place to ensure that learners are retained within the system, that we will gradually see an increase in the percentage outcomes in terms of the throughput rate. This particular point in the program of action, we accept almost as a given, because there have been some anomalies within how the program of action has been refined and finalized, but the extension of no fee status to quintile 2 secondary schools is in fact an achievement that we have already met. So the quintile 2 secondary schools have already been declared no fee status. So we don't want to be too opportunistic in claiming this is a really victory, but it's for us an issue of alignment within the program of action in its development phase. Another key indicator also would be for us to attract appropriately qualified and competent teachers in all of the learning areas. We don't want to just have an emphasis on maths and science. We understand the curriculum to be a holistic curriculum, and to ensure that we are able to give attention both in terms of the resources that we plow into on the human, in terms of managing our human resources, but also to ensure that we have a balanced curriculum and access to competent teachers qualified in all of those learning areas. Here also, there's an active recruitment campaign to look at the increased enrollment in initial teacher education programs. Already this year, we'll see 9,000 new graduates emerging from the system, and we hope to see those numbers increase as the efforts that were invested last year in the recruitment campaign have not been able to be matched in this year in terms of the build-up to next year's enrollment because of financial constraints for advertising and advocacy work. But we will see the momentum set up by the recruitment drive of last year carrying over, and we are beginning to attract really high-caliber high school learners who now enter the tertiary level, who are now showing a keen interest in taking up teaching. To improve the infrastructure, resources, and equipment by ensuring that public schools have the necessary infrastructure, this includes the basic services at a recommended standard. For this, if there are further questions, we do have norms and standards that have been identified for adequate resources and infrastructure being provided, and the representatives from our systems and planning branch might be able to speak to that in greater detail. We also open, I think we've indicated this to the chair, that at a later point during the course of this calendar period, that we should, as fast as possible, be able to present the planning around the infrastructure support for schools to be part of a separate presentation. So I think there will be some significant progress to report on, as well as targets that have been set. So the development of a delivery plan for basic resources to all schools by 2011 has been set as a target. And the key departments there, we've based these figures to provide 5,316 new classrooms, 66 new schools, 159 laboratories, and 159 libraries on the figures that we have sourced from our provinces based on their actual plans for this financial year. So this would be a key measurable for us to be taking into account when we report on progress of this program of action. The departments involved in delivering this would be Department of Basic Education and our provincial education departments, because they manage at that level. The Department of Mineral and Energy Affairs, Water Affairs, DPW, and local authorities. Another key action would be to intensify the efforts to ensure that all schools have safe and supporting environments for children. The issue of school safety has reared its head several times, starkly so on a number of occasions, to point out just how much work needs to be done on that level. We've seen levels of violence escalate in instances, but our success stories point to some of the provinces having developed very, very effective programs to ensure safety and security at schools, so much so that this has created a backlash from drug lords who are not happy with some of the measures that have been put in place in schools, especially around the issue of drug abuse and access to learners. The campaign around drug abuse targeting schools will be conducted and continues to be done. The other aspect is to develop a training manual and to distribute search and seizure regulations to all schools. And schools do have the powers to conduct search and seizure but not all schools are fully aware of that, and that is part of our ongoing aim. Also to enhance safety infrastructure at schools, to ensure that more schools are fenced, especially at schools that are at risk. And to embark on community mobilization to protect schools and to lead to a reduction of the incidence of vandalism at schools, especially outside of schools, normal school hours. To support and to develop a teaching profession that is dedicated to providing education of high quality is another key target of ours. The pilot of the continuous professional teacher development management system is currently being conducted at 144 schools participating in the CPTD management system. Another step would be to provide bursaries for prospective teachers. 9,000 student teachers in targeted areas will, as I said, be exiting based on the support by the Funza Lushaka bursary for teacher education. The other one is also another steep target, and we're hoping that we can ensure that this be met. It's to establish teacher resource centres in the regions, and here we talk of regions as being clusters of districts rather than per district itself, because we see that this will roll out in far beyond March 2010 as one of our key targets, and it will be something to watch in our preparation for the next program of action. Also, to create conditions for effective school management, to include the M&E functions and performance management. We currently have started implementing the IQMS system in all schools. Also, to provide training for principals. Currently, the 1,600 principals will complete the ACE in terms of this. To implement the performance management provisions of the South African Schools Act, and to ensure that performance plans are prepared by all schools. That will be a key measurable for us to be looking at. The initial steps followed in the establishment of NEDU would be evidenced by policies, procedures, and instruments for NEDU to be finalized, as well as to establish a senior management system with performance contracts by getting all principals to sign performance contracts in their role within the senior management service in school. The further action would be to intensify efforts to ensure access and retention of learners in rural and farm schools specifically through the rationalization of small and non-viable schools. Here we would be looking at monitoring the closure and the merger of schools and the F-14 agreement. Regular reports would be provided on these as part of our measurement of progress. Also, the development and the distribution of the discussion documents on hospitals. The guidelines will be developed and distributed in this reporting cycle. A further action around strengthening the skills and human resource base includes the implementation of programs to improve the understanding of values and human rights especially around matters related to gender equity amongst young people. We are in the process of providing curriculum support materials for the Bill of Responsibilities, and the distribution and further development of that would be measurable. Also, the guidelines on sexual violence to be distributed and implemented, and for all schools to publicize and to implement these guidelines will be measured in this reporting cycle. 90 girls, the Gem and Them Club is based on an international model. And it's called the Girls' Education Movement and the Boys' Education Movement to begin to raise gender awareness and issues of gender equity. 90 such clubs, 10 per province, have already been established and will be developed further during this reporting cycle. Further, the promotion and to build a sense of common national identity amongst young people is a key action that we share with the Department of Arts and Culture around building a common national identity through dialogue and events, and also to look at the opportunities for national days for sport and cultural events to promote national identity and social cohesion. One such program includes the Albert Luthuli History Awards, which is run annually across the country. A very key one for us, and one which we like to crow about a little bit, and that is the expanded provision of basic literacy classes for adults through the Kari Gude Math Literacy Campaign. This is an initiative which has a kind of 3-year program to expand the provision of literacy. Currently, in this financial year, we have 620,000 adults that will exit with basic literacy and numeracy skills through the Kari Gude program. Also, a key action would also be to embark on further partnerships with other governments, with other literacy programs and projects, so that we ensure that these are also aligned to the core programs that have been developed. And to enable volunteers to facilitate basic literacy, so that we, during this period, will be able to train and support 34,500 volunteers to facilitate the literacy classes in the community. This, in fact, the figure of 620,000 is more conservative than the interest that has been displayed in it, because we've had a particular with a cutback in the resources, we haven't been able to adequately enroll everybody who has shown an interest in this literacy campaign. A further action in this particular area of the program of action is to improve performance in no-fee schools. We have the concern that certainly within no-fee schools there's the assumption in communities that's around that the no-fee schools mean no-quality schools, and that's something which we have to actively challenge, because it's meant to be one of our poverty alleviation initiatives. In improving the performance, also to include the supply of basic resources for teaching and learning, and to support teachers in using those resources to address the backlogs, to address the access to clean water and sanitation, also against the NEEMS backlog. The one thing that we are hoping to be able to report on positively is the distribution of the Back to Basics Foundation for Learning resource pack to all schools with grade R classes. And this is one of the key areas of interest for the monitoring and evaluation unit of the presidency when we reported on this, because these resources have already been produced and have been distributed quite widely. There will also be further Kids Up resources distributed to a further 4,300 schools during this reporting cycle, and a further number will be identified for the next PRA. There are also youth development interventions, which in the program of action are tied more clearly to the National Youth Development Agency. But these specific ones that I've listed here are the ones that impact directly on the programs of the Department of Basic Education and the provincial departments. In this instance, to utilize the existing MOU with Sport Recreation South Africa to ensure opportunities for mass participation and at national events, to also provide schools with opportunities for extramural development. and for national events and all the codes for learners. Also, to share the responsibility for promoting and delivering school sport as a foundational element for youth development. Another area which I've extracted from the POA is that of the extend the expanded public works program. In this particular instance, expanding access to ECD by doubling the number enrolled in early childhood development to 600,000 through 1,000 new sites with more than 3,500 practitioners trained and employed. The responsibility in this instance is carried largely by the Department of Social Development, that the Education Department supports it in terms of the training of its ECD educators. And this is shared also with the Department of Health in terms of the additional functions thing. In another key area in the CRA, it's about building cohesive, caring and sustainable communities through the promotion of shared values and a greater sense of community solidarity. This largely in terms of the basic, the Department of Basic Education is linked to the National Symbols Campaign being popularized through various initiatives of the department. It has co-published with the Department of Arts and Culture, My Country booklet, which has all of the symbols, national symbols, with lesson plans and very interesting background for teachers to use as well for learners in their research. And a second print run of that has been organized for countrywide distribution. So if members are interested, you might want to see a copy of that publication. But it's a very valuable teaching resource at all levels, and teachers have been very pleased to use that. In terms of our next steps, I'm focusing, as I said, solely on the basic education aspect. Our first progress report is due in October next month, and the three task teams that have been established to facilitate and manage the implementation of the POA within this cluster are as follows. They're the Human Resource and Skills Development Task Team, and this one is led by Higher Education and the Department of Labor, as well as the Comprehensive Healthcare Task Team led by the Department of Health, and the Youth Task Team, which is led largely by the National Youth Development Agency and DSD. A communications task team will also meet monthly before every cluster meeting to identify the key areas around the POA that require further public advocacy, buy-in and support, and will also report on those occasions through organized media briefing sessions organized by the cluster. The cluster of human development is co-chaired by the DGs of Health and Higher Education, and they will exercise oversight over those three task teams. Currently today, the ministers of our human development cluster are meeting with their DGs, as I said, to discuss the progress report for the next Lakota. The preparation towards the next POA cycle will also start in earnest in the last quarter of this year in order to align the new strategic plan with the MTSF and other priorities that have been identified through the M&E process. In terms of the alignment with planning and monitoring, with planning and the monitoring and evaluation sections of the presidency, additional targets have been set by the M&E unit in the presidency to ensure that we address the short-term challenges in the system. These will also be factored into our planning for the 2010 school year, where January 1 is seen as, you know, when schools open in January, it's seen as a key kind of launch pad for government's intensive program of resource provisioning and support to schools to start the year effectively and with all those resources, basic resources in place. And also through the next POA cycle, we will hopefully address the particular steps towards enhancing quality outputs for the education system. I thank you for this opportunity, and I believe my colleagues will be able to add to it. I do have, to note that for purposes of this particular program of action discussion, all of the strategic plans and operational plans of each of the departments have been aligned, and therefore what has emerged in the program of action is a core set of achievable targets that can be measured by the end of this cycle. but it doesn't in any way detract from the broader strategic plans and operational plans of each of the departments against which they also have to do quarterly progress reports. I just want to ask Dr. Makhalakeshi if you would like to add in terms of that final comment of mine before I hand over to the chair for further. You said we've covered. Thank you, chair.
Okay, thank you, Vivian. When you started, you talked of the electoral mandate, which I like, because it's talking of uniting us. When we introduced ourselves here, we gave you the parties that we came from. But I want to believe that now that we're moving to questions, we'll be trying to find ways of uniting ourselves here. The questions will be about uniting the schools and not necessarily about these different parties. And we are going to ask the questions. We'll take five, I think it's more workable like that. And because I don't want to call others by name and others say, hey, I'm still going to ask. Once identified, you say who you are first. And because I've seen there was a lot of negotiations between two parties there, I'm expecting a lot of questions from that end. That person number one can find me. Honorable can find me. Followed by... Oh, yeah. Yeah, those two, everybody knows them. Honorable Mda. No, I can't. Definitely I can't. So it's going to be Honorable Kansani, Honorable Mda, and Honorable Dudley. I'm doing fine. Honorable Dr. Lopez Lawrence. Four, in that order. Don't we have a fifth person for now? Okay, those four will be. And number five will be Honorable Silas Makube. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. As said, Honorable Kubai. Now we're discussing possibility of coming back home. Chair, that's on a lighter note. I'm joking. Just to say that, Chair, I just wanted to understand on the slide that spoke on strengthening the skills and human resource base. The last bullet point speaks about providing support to matric learners, increased number of candidates writing and passing NCS. In light of the weekend, I've noticed over the weekend that there was a discussion around the dropping of a distinction percentage from 80 to 70. Can I get clarity? As part of the support that we're providing and increasing that support, what is happening around that? The second one would be on the slide that speaks on, I think it's also, still a slide on human resource, strengthening skills and human resource base. The one that speaks about departments who are involved, just to try and get a sense if there is some form of what level of collaboration is there, a level, service level agreement, or what is happening in terms of ensuring that each and every department delivers according to what has been committed to. Because you might find that you made a commitment. For example, you have local authorities to be able to deliver a certain specific need, or let's say provide electricity in that particular school if the area is covered by the local municipality electric department. But what I just want to understand, what is it that you thought in order to tighten those departments or those people or the stakeholders to ensure that they deliver according to what you have said? Any mechanisms in terms of that, so that we don't run the risk of saying we'll deliver all these things only to find another party does not come on board. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. I think my colleague has covered me on the first question, because I had already wanted to establish that in light of the recent developments that we've seen in the media and the subsequent commitment by the department, are we likely to say the support is going to be given on the basis that the level is going to be dropped from 80 to 70? But I think she has covered me in the manner in which she has approached the question. But mine, Chairperson, well, I welcome the program of action, because I think from a point of committed partners, there is a lot that can be achieved. But there are gaps that I think we should speak on. As I said earlier on, I'm Anele Mda from the Congress of the People. I think I would want to get clarity, DT, on the part that says there is, I think it's on the slide, on the very same slide of strengthening the skills in human resource space. It talks of training maths and science teachers, which is the time frame that you put for yourself is March 2010, which is likely closer for me. And on the basis of that, I would want them to check if we are saying already there is anything that is happening on the ground to make sure that this goal, this case performance area is achievable when you arrive at that time, and we are not caught saying as the portfolio committee chairperson, and now seeing as if we're holding them at ransom, will be saying you were not compelled to put March 2010. Are you putting March 2010 on the basis that already you have been able to work the ground, you have put systems in place to make sure that come March 2010, this would have been achieved? And saying that that maybe March 2010 is closer, are there any indications by now that are really supporting 2010 that this will be achievable? And then there is the other one that says, I think it's on the slide of, let me just check here. It's still the strengthening of skills and human-based resources. It talks of attracting appropriately qualified, competent teachers for bursary schemes. I think it's a required intervention in as far as making sure that the department delivers on its mandate. But are we having the department able to identify these areas where there is this gap that the department must intervene? And if it's there, is it going to be piloted, or it's going to be a national program that is going to be rolled out through all provinces? And then what monitoring measures will be there to make sure that the intervention that is provided by the department is able to assist to at the end of the day, reap the awaited results? Thanks, Chair.
Okay.
Number three was, yeah, Honorable Dad.
Yeah, thanks for the presentation. I was going to just say it would have made it a lot easier if there was numbers on the slides, so that, because my referring back became a big task. Just the interesting sort of cooperation or coordination between the health and education, and perhaps it would be interesting to hear more about what people have in mind in terms of clinics at schools and that kind of thing. The question comes to mind with attracting teachers, really how, and is that the same strategy, or have we discovered some new strategy? Is there, have we got some special hope in terms of doing something differently, because obviously this has been approached before. I would like to know what the teacher resource centres will actually offer, what the details around that would be. And the volunteers that for basic literacy, just the issue of are they being paid and what sort of salaries, and are we likely to get problems around those issues of basic salaries there. ECD trained practitioners that talk about 3,500, and are these already trained, or is this a number that we're aspiring to? And I know that the difficulties that I've had before to even get people to take up bursaries in this area, so I'm just wondering there, have you got ideas of where you will access these people from? And then one thing I didn't notice was nutrition programs, and I may just have missed that, and that would be good. Thanks.
Thank you. Honorable Global Florence.
I have two questions. The first one is regarding libraries.
159 libraries. Are these new libraries? Does that include the upgrading of the current libraries? It was reported in the press recently they've underlined the dismal state of affairs in our school libraries. The second question is, you refer to the training of principals, 1,600. How do you identify those principals? Then the following question is regarding the development and distribute discussion documents on hostels. It was reported in the press this morning about the Imbiza in Bloemfontein, and there was a reference to transport and the problem with transport to school. I would like your comments on that. And then the GEM and the BEM clubs. Perhaps possible just to give us some more information on those clubs. And then what is the definition of a volunteer when it comes to Kariguri School or the Kariguri project as a whole? I would like to know exactly who the volunteers are.
Okay. The last on the first list is Honorable Makureni.
Thanks, Chairperson. Just a few questions. On the safety in schools, it involves a lot of child trafficking, it may be issues of other people, other reasons, accessing learners and so on. I think the main dimension I wanted to come from is one that relates to the involvement of staff, whether we are involving them in any way or what becomes their role in that regard. The second one, you talking rationalization of small and non-viable schools in rural and farms. To me, what it means is that it's going to reduce the number of schools, and it means you're going to have fewer schools and probably far away from some of the areas. What mechanisms are there? Has it gone back to the issues of transport and so on its own? It's likely to as well discourage some learners to want to go longer distances to those particular schools and so on. In some areas, the department provides bicycles and so on and so on. But I'm just saying, in the whole, what becomes your thinking in that area? The third one, which is a bit interesting to me, you said there's a perception that the no-fee schools somewhat corresponds or is equal to no-quality education or schooling in those schools. Is it a perception or is it translating into reality? Because if it does, then you can't fight it. It will be a challenge to want parents to understand something different when practically that's what it's actually happening. So to me, it may be too soon perhaps to could have done a study on that particular one, but we may want to be interested in the results in those particular schools so that when we say we are challenging it, the intention is good. There's no problem with that. Poverty alleviation and ensuring that all children participate in that. But I'm saying if it does as well translate in reality to no quality, then we've got a challenge as well. I think it will mean our efforts should be intensified. The last one, which has been a tendency, is our giving support to these schools around January, the last point you mentioned. To me, the budget within the department starts in April. So if there's any particular support that we should have done, we necessarily have had time to do or implement most of those between April and even December. But why we should wait on some of the things till the last quarter, I may not necessarily understand it. It's one thing for political purposes to move about in January and encourage learners to go back to school and so on, for political, whatever reasons. But I'm saying in terms of the department, implementation and so on, we need to ensure that that is done. The support is given mostly during the year or when the need arises and not just wait for the last quarter. Thanks.
I now request that we get responses to those five. I hope I didn't forget anyone. Everybody who wanted to speak spoke, right? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. We're going to share responses to that, and we'll call on the representative from Branch C to speak to our planning and system branch to speak to some of those responses. What I would just like to comment, and I wasn't clear about the very last question. Maybe I could start there and ask if the member could repeat the question about the last quarter
I didn't hear you.
The last question, Honorable Ma, the one about the January intervention, I guess. Can you talk to that again? By the politicians, blah, blah, blah.
No, the focus is not really on politicians. So they said a slide from the last one. The last bullet, the talks preparation towards the next cycle starting in last quarter in 2009. And on your own, you then referred to January necessarily. I think mostly that's where the intervention and support is given. And I'm saying that, oh, you want to dispute that?
Yeah, I will respond and I understand.
Oh, okay, okay, sure, thank
you. If you understood this question, it means then you can start responding.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Maybe I should start with that one first, because I think there's an incorrect perception or interpretation of what I've said. I'm reporting on the next steps of the Program of Action Development, which is going to start in earnest for the planning cycle for this next 3 years, as we do it. For this particular Program of Action, I explained that it was an interim arrangement where we in fact still have, we planned as one department, not higher education and basic education, that for the next reporting cycle, the program of action will start its development phase in the last quarter of the year. And I was adding to that the intervention by the planning, by the monitoring and evaluation unit in the presidency, having identified January 1 as the delivery date for implementation of those additional features to the program of action. The March 2010 closing date or end date for this program of action was identified purely because of the financial year end and all of the planning that we're doing in the transitional stages of the new alignment of government departments. And for that reason, there's almost been a conservative estimation of what is possible by March 2010, whereas the development of the next full program of action has to take account of the separation of priorities and functions and responsibilities of the new department, and therefore will be aligned with the revised strategic plans of each government department. So we can't plan as we did under social cluster. We now need to begin to plan around the new creation of departments. Whereas in FET, as an example, we have FET schools, but we also have FET colleges. And that distinction has to be clarified. When we're talking about grades 10 to 12 learners in school, they are different to learners who are sitting in FET colleges post-school, as an example. Whereas before we would have had a common program of action, we now need to distinct, to actually differentiate between those elements that sit in different parts of the administration. So that's the only reference to the last quarter. I think we all agree that you can't plan for the new year, you know, in the last quarter, already those plans are in place with many of the provinces, but it's an alignment around the programmatic issues that will be measured through the program of action. I hope that satisfies my question. I want to come to the issue of school safety. I don't know whether I'm working my way backwards, Mother, so bear with me, Chair, if you can just correct me if I skip any of the questions.
Yeah, actually, as you respond, they'll be listening if their questions have been responded to, and we'll check at the end.
Okay.
So that you respond the way you feel. Because this question, you know how to grade them yourself. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. You've asked about, the member asked about the questions about the involvement of South African Police Service in terms of school safety. The school safety initiatives are very clearly part of our social cohesion programs, but also part of the infrastructure support programs in all of the provinces. And largely, this is a provincial issue. If you look at the program of action, you also see that the provincial education departments play a key role, and for the first time have been included in the program of action as responsible departments. They tend to kind of get overlooked when we talk about the global issues around on a national level, but actual implementation and planning for issues as specific as school safety happen within the provincial competency. And it's at that level that our department, for instance, through our headcount structures and the Council of Education Ministers, regularly will measure the performance around points like that, where the provinces have been identified as the responsible department. At that local level, to use the example where all of the departments that and services that can be rendered are all drawn in as partners in ensuring that there is a measure of school safety that can be guaranteed through such partnerships. Obviously, I think in terms of policy provision, the department is committed to ensuring that the policies are in place to arm school managers with the means to manage those sites and to ensure that learners and teachers are protected about them. But I think that we certainly can't do so without the assistance of staff and local communities. There was also a question about the rationalization of smaller schools and farm schools particularly, and whether that is going to how we intend doing that in terms of ensuring full optimal access to the resources. And clearly here in terms of our rural education plan, there are key steps to take account, first of all, on the basis of an audit of what exists in the provinces, and especially those provinces that are predominantly rural, where the large numbers of learners and teachers find themselves, but not necessarily matched by the resources that support learning and teaching there. So there are different steps that have been explored, and that is to look at transport, but again here we would need to consult, and here this is where our provinces will guide us. Those broad plans can in fact be shaped through consultation with provinces at a national level, but actual implementation is going to be realized through effective provincial planning and resource allocation. So it is not going to be a kind of irrational way in which schools are going to be closed or combined, but we have to take stock of what actually exists in those contexts. For instance, you may find that a farm school with multi-grade teaching can best benefit from access to a clustered arrangement with other similar schools, and those are the issues that we need to be taking into account, both through the audit of what exists on the ground and what can best optimally be accessed by those learners and teachers to support them. But I'll ask my colleagues that we are not answered the question fully to come back and respond as well. Just to come to the Gem and Ben Club, this is an initiative with UNICEF, which has been run as a pilot across across the provinces where Gem and Ben Clubs have been launched. They're largely seen as an initiative to involve our youth in developing positive values and also to engage them in programs that will develop their gender awareness and sensitivity to their role within schools, as especially in instances where girls themselves have been the victims of not only abuse but also discrimination by their fellow students. And in that sense, there's a sharing around the program guided by the UNICEF initiative, together with our social community branch. I can ask that we share more information. I don't have all of the information to provide around the Gem and Ben Club, and I have to ensure that there will be some more information.
Are there any documents?
We can get all of the documents, yeah, because they are an international model that have been followed. Maybe I can just hand over to you, and I'll come back to the other questions if you can take that one.
Okay, I'll just try and cover the questions that relate to our section of the department, which is systems and planning, which does resources as well, education resources. In terms of the teacher bursary, the Funza Lushaka teacher bursary, and how we would identify the gaps, we have extensive research that has given indicators on supply and demand issues, which reflect where the gaps are. Largely, they remain in rural areas, and they remain in areas of maths and science as key subjects that we want to introduce. So it's always hard to find a teacher or to appoint a teacher in deep rural areas that are offering those kinds of subjects. And there will forever remain our difficulties in terms of how we look at it. The Funza Lushaka bursary scheme
has attracted, has provided an opportunity for learners who are looking towards pursuing a teaching career, and the way in which we have marketed it, it has shown that more and more learners are beginning to see teaching as a more attractive career to come into, and the applications are increasing. The difficulty always remains with the end result in terms of the placement, because these learners, they get a bursary coming from deep rural areas. They come and study in the urban area, and when they apply to go out into the rural areas, they may not indicate that that's the need. So you always have a disjuncture between where the need is and where the supply wants to go. And, well, we don't want to be punitive and force at the onset that you have to go into rural areas, but by process of elimination of where the jobs are, and your bursary commitments, in the end, you do place people. We are successful in placing them. We allow them to go through a process of indicating their choice, and then we place them through that process. And then the ones who are unsuccessful in their choices, we renegotiate with them around where possibilities are on other areas of need. And we have managed to place the current bursars that have completed, we have managed to place them like that. They're not placed within the first month of the school academic year starting because of those problems around the disjuncture of choice versus need. But in the end, by the first quarter, we were successful in placing all of those who had completed the bursary, the current bursars that have just come out. And the number of bursaries are increasing on an annual basis. So in the long term, we will be able to provide more teachers in those areas of need, given how it is. But for now, the need still shows that in the rural areas, it is hard to find a maths and a science teacher. And so that's despite the Funza Lushaka bursaries that are coming out. And so in an interim capacity, we have explored looking at foreign recruitment whilst we are allowing for learners, for more learners to be trained in the university to be able to come out into rural areas and teach there. There are never problems in urban areas. There's always a glut of teachers for urban areas. So I don't know if that helps you, you know, in the specifics of our planning. The more we increase the bursaries, the more we'd be able to address that. And an interim plan in the absence of having sufficient numbers for deep rural areas is to look at foreign recruitment. We have a program where we are beginning to look at our neighboring areas that have got teachers. Zimbabwe has got a lot of teachers in South Africa that are looking towards getting into schools, but we're also looking beyond that across other countries that have an interest, first world countries in particular, as well as other developing countries. In terms of resource centers and what they will do, the idea of the resource center is to take the support that teachers need closest to where the schools are. It will be located at a district level, but where there are not sufficient resource centers to serve each district, the starting point would be to cluster them so that one resource center can serve more than one district. You would have all your training programs happen there. You would have all your materials that are available for teachers that would be provided there. There are models of resource centers currently that exist in some provinces, especially highly urbanized provinces like the Western Cape and Gauteng. And the idea is to extend this then into the more rural provinces where you have your subject advisory service being able to provide all training programs at these resource centers for teachers around clustered areas of development, and also that you have any materials that can be shared, that it is provided, and have photocopying facilities and, you know, like that in the resource centers. So it's geared towards enhancing the quality of teaching and learning, and to provide support in particular for teachers so that they can take back that into the classroom and translate that in classroom practice. The questions around the libraries and whether they are new ones, the specific figures that are indicated there, those are new libraries that would be built. the development plan cuts across three areas, which is done simultaneously but with different priority. The first is looking at basic resources, which is the first priority, where schools who have nothing, they are prioritized to have the basic benchmark of standards that is required within schools, like water, electricity, sanitation, basic requirements of materials, infrastructural equipment and so on. The second is looking at the minimum requirements, which is where the issues of libraries, labs, basic sports facilities are provided. And the third is optimal facilities, which is the state of the art schools, and that's the last and future-looking kind of planning that goes all the way to 2015, when all schools have reached the baseline and you are then able to upgrade further. There are schools who have optimum facilities currently, so it's not that we're starting at a zero base, but we definitely don't have all our schools as state-of-the-art schools. So it's a differentiation of how you apply and provide. For instance, a school may have may be categorized as a minimum requirements with a library that is in need of upgrading. That would be listed as a school that you know you need to get them up to a particular standard. But we would give priority to a school that does not have a library first and ensure that they have the library before you get to maintaining and upgrading the current libraries that are there. So that's the order of how we deal with it. And then the training of principals. Currently we have the ACE that is offered. The ACE is a pilot project right now. It's not offered to all principals. It's not mandatory that all principals must be trained. But in a future-looking plan of the department, we would like to, first of all, standardize that to be a school principal, you need to go through a qualification that enables you to be a manager of a school. We believe that that would improve the quality of principals, but also would begin to streamline in career pathing. Not everyone is a manager, or not everyone wants to choose to be a manager. Now, largely, the introduction of the OSD, the occupation-specific skills options for educators, have allowed for a career pathing. So they have got now choices between wanting to be a classroom teacher or wanting to be a manager. If you choose to be a manager, we need to provide career opportunities, which include training opportunities, that will allow that management stream to grow. Similarly, if you choose to be a classroom teacher, we need to provide development programs to allow you to be a fantastic, really well-skilled teacher in the classroom. And depending on the career options that you choose, in the future, we would then like to make mandatory that to be a manager within education, irrespective of the principal would be the third level of a manager within the school. But after that, you get into the district management. So that's the career stream you are following. And if you do that, you know, you need to have the skills, and we need to identify what the training program is. The pilot is beginning to sift out what are the kinds of training things that is required. That is why it's a pilot. And we've not finalized on it because it looks largely at principals, but it doesn't look at HODs, it doesn't look at deputies, it doesn't look at becoming a subject advisor. So you'd have to build in that training, you know, the variations of it. And once we have concluded and finalized on what the training program will be, the long-term plan is to regulate that it's mandatory for you to have that kind of training. So in the future, we do envisage that it will be like that, but it's not immediate because it's a pilot, and not all principals have been trained. The other area is it would then obviously be linked to your performance agreements. The OSD also talks, there's a part of the OSD that talks about principals in the future have to sign a performance management agreement, much like any of the other managers within education at a departmental level does. And in terms of that, there's a draft agreement that we've worked out, but it needs to be finalized in terms of implementation. We need the union to agree on the format, the template that we are using, before we can actually implement it. It would largely streamline the job description of a principal, and it would assist in terms of the accountability you know, that if the school sets out, there would be differentiation of what schools would be able to do in your plan. But it, in terms of accounting and reporting on the performance plan of the school, the deliverables that the school have to agree to, it would be the first level of accountability that clearly in, if you set out to do five things, you know, five objectives for the year, you'd be able to measure whether that in fact has been achieved. So we see that as a huge gain for the teaching fraternity. And then the last question, which leads to the issues of the rural schools, I think the question has largely been covered by my colleague, DDG Carlson. But I think the whole question of you know, the word was used, rationalization of schools, and we talk about merger because of the context out there. The idea is not to have fewer schools, but to have better quality of schools. And if you do an audit of what's happening in the rural areas, you'll find that whilst there may be a lot of schools out there, but there's a school that is totally dysfunctional in its whole infrastructure. There are not proper ablution facilities. There's no, nothing is available in it. You know, you can hardly even call it a school. And hardly 5 kilometers away, there is a very beautiful school. And both those schools have got very small numbers, multi-grade teaching, all of that. You know, and so the idea is to then identify some basis of a standard of infrastructure. And 5 kilometers is maybe a long distance for young learners to walk, but it's certainly a manageable area. So you can merge 2 such schools or 3 such schools in an area, and that's how you would apply your mind in terms of merging. There are areas that have currently undergone the merging process already. Gauteng in the that Carltonville, Mahaliesburg area, you know, which is can also apply in terms of rural, not as much in the description as Limpopo or KZN or Eastern Cape, but that was the soundboard that was used, and it was done very successfully. The idea is not to to let a community be worse off than what they were, but to enhance the quality of what education is provided. And so it is a process where you bring all the parties together, and they would together identify that that is the appropriate action that is required within the area, and move. And in the process of moving, the only problem is that you can't have 3 principals. So, you know, the teachers are not affected. They all have jobs. But obviously, you'd have to then work out by process of grading who would be the principal and whether you have to re-advertise the poll for all 3 principals to apply. That's the only real hard difficulty around merger. Everyone else in the pilots that we have had so far has been very happy in the community of what has happened because we have taken them all along with in the steps that have to be followed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I still have a couple of other responses in case people, I don't want to be accused of not answering the question.
Yeah, I wanted to check because I realized that, okay, if you are still answering, do
this. Yeah, I just wanted to respond to the issue around the clarity on the matric distinction part in that. I think that we are guided, or rather guided, not by the media response, the media interpretations, but rather the processes that we have put in place. The issue is that the minister issued a gazette to begin to invite public comment, and the ministry itself has indicated that there's no announcement of legislation. There's an invite, there's a consultative process, which the minister is more than happy to broaden and to look at. This is also running cheek by jowl with the curriculum implementation review process, which is being conducted both through the general education as well as the further education branches of the department, and that has that whole process has engaged with educators, education officials, key education critics and academics who have been involved in this independent process of consultation, and that process certainly will hopefully come up with a clear set of recommendations which the minister will discuss with the Council of Education Ministers, which might very well result in a range of implementation changes. There is no, that currently, there is no change in the legislation as yet, and I think we must be guided by that as the fact governing this. I think that we can also clearly ask that, that the branch responsible for this response more directly, if my answer is not comprehensive enough for the members.
I see there is another question. Are we moving to the second round? Because I want to check if follow-up questions on the last issue. Okay, I'll allow that first. Yeah.
Thank you for the response, but something worrying is because if one has to go according to what has been said in the media, the minister was surprised. She said she didn't know anything about what was being said about the 70% and 80%. And they were told that the whole thing has since been withdrawn by the department to be redrafted. So what is the position?
If I may,
Chair,
just say that
I see there's a hand. I'm checking because this was a follow-up question. She wanted to respond to close it. You want to come with another follow-up on the
picture? I asked the question. Can I just say in the context so that we bring it to?
Okay.
Because I'm the one who asked this question in any way.
But Honorable, you
asked for a follow-up.
Honorable, you are covered to have also helped come with the question.
Mm-hmm. Chair, I would propose that we have a written submission on this issue that clearly details, because obviously she's not the responsible person for the issue. Would request that the department prepares a submission to the committee for next week's discussion.
Yeah, I see the department nodding. For sure, we'll get that response. But are you satisfied that you answered, Honorable?
Well, I'll comply.
Thank you. Okay, can I see hands, and I want to understand that all the questions were answered, so we continue with more questions. I'm noting.
What about another follow-up?
Come on, honourable members. We can sing together, but we need to talk one by one. Doctor, you were saying?
My question on the volunteers and also the transfers.
So that was not answered. Because that's what I wanted to do, Doc. You're helping me. I wanted to check if there are outstanding questions, but then the honourable members were coming in. Thanks.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I was taking your breath while Ms. Gay was busy.
Okay.
I've got four items that I haven't yet been covered, and I want to come to that. The issue around, there was a question principle around the collaboration with other departments and whether there are service level agreements in place. Now, the nature of the service level agreement as it stands is through the task team of the cluster. And it's at that level that there's oversight being exercised by the steering committee, by the cluster itself, as these clusters are co-chaired. And it's at that level that we need to make our reports before it can even go anywhere else. So that's where departments are held accountable for their contributions to the program of action. There was also a question around why March 2010, and if I understood the question correctly, it is why is it that we set ourselves such a narrow target date, which might very well be unrealistic. I think I covered that in a previous reply as well, where I indicated that because of the transitional nature, in fact, it was a six-month program of action, not an annual one as we had before, because of the election period and then the setup of the new administration. So March 2010 was in fact a conservative deadline, but with the intention of further rollout for some of those aspects into the next cycle. There was a question around the cooperation between health and education. Yes, there's strong cooperation there. We've also just seen it recently with the H1N1. And I don't want to invite an avalanche of questions around that too, but there certainly has been very key collaboration with the department, between the two departments, about how this process has been managed, and all of our health screening programs, all of that was hand in glove with our branch that deals with health and education, and collaborating with the Department of Health. I'll come back to the transport one. The issue of volunteers, when we did the presentation by Kari Gude, I think when we briefed the portfolio committee, we could fix,
Professor McCann spoke in detail about the manner in which volunteers have been recruited, and there's been a large interest from retired teachers, unemployed, and young graduates who are all involved in. In fact, we even have blind and deaf volunteers that have been part of the program that do qualify for a stipend, which is a very basic one, and the budget in this instance was cut back for this financial year, so we merely increased the number of learners that were part of the program, but we didn't reduce the stipend earned by those volunteers. So there is a basic stipend that is available for covering their interest. And it's all grown. There's still been a growing level of interest for people to volunteer in this program. In fact, graduates of the program, of other programs, are involved in further volunteer work. But again, if they ask further queries around the cover of that professional card before to the people that can be the transport matter, I can't recall the full question.
On transport, she's going to remind you of the question. Who asked the question on transport, by the way? Dr. Zoba, do you mind reminding us?
I can only undertake that we will forward that information because I don't have enough detailed information.
Yes, Vivi, but while you are coming with that, I remember that we informed, I think, once about the schools that missed. Some of them, it was because maybe there were four kids and somebody had a bus, the whole bus transporting them and claiming from the department. That's one of the examples that one can give, that it was not like the department wanted to stop it. It was because of the main implications around it. So that I think we'll get more responses on stage later. Can we then move to, are you still on the, because we're going to ask a lot of questions, all of us, but I was like checking if all the questions were answered so that we can move on.
Because I didn't hear any response in terms of nutrition programs.
Yeah.
And the ECD practitioners and where that actually stands at the moment. I was wondering.
That's one outstanding question. Can you deal with that?
Just very quickly, the number indicated there are the numbers that are currently being trained. By the end of this reporting cycle, then those 3,500 would have been trained, the ECD educators, because this is a program which has been spearheaded largely by DSD, and education is responsible for the training of those educators. The other one was? The new school nutrition program. Yeah, we didn't, for this particular cycle, we didn't add it as a new target. It's part of our strategic plan, and the operational plan covers the rollout of the school nutrition program. And in fact, there's an expansion in this cycle to the Quintal 1 secondary school. So there would be a positive report on an extension of the school nutrition program into that cycle. And there's an incremental kind of rollout which will hopefully begin to move to other quintiles as well.
Yeah, I think on that one, quintiles, so that we move after completing that one. The quintiles had a problem that you find schools, neighboring schools, just one across the street, the other one is quintile 1, the other one is quintile 3. And that one, of course, they don't pay. It caused a lot of problems. Maybe you can tell us how the department is going to make sure that you don't make quintile, I mean next door neighbors, one is quintile 1 and the other one is said to be rich and they don't get. Can you deal with that and then we'll continue? Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's the problem lots of schools have complained about, what was the criteria. I think everyone understands the manner in which the information was initially gathered to classify the quintiles, and we are currently in the process of developing and re-looking at that to correct or standardize the information base that we have on how you grade a school. Certainly, it's in the same area and the same road. It's the answers that people gave on the questionnaire. So maybe the lesson that is learned is that we must run a workshop to explain what the questions are intended to gather in terms of information. We also have to look at our questions. I mean, some of those questions that classified was asking information from families about how many cars they have, you know, who attended the school, and it's perhaps giving the wrong impression. I mean, if you answer it simplistically, you can have two cars, but one car standing in the backyard there and it's not operational, and the other car, you know, those things which have compounded the classification of quintiles. We are re-looking at it, and it will be corrected in the future, in the near future, in terms of, you know, but there's also opportunity. I mean, it's really bad. The department doesn't just leave the, you know, schools that are different in the categorization of quintiles. We don't just throw them aside, which is why you'd see in the classification of no fee schools, we've increased the benchmarks consistently to cover those irregularities that are within the system.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Kanyako, and then Honorable Gina, I just want to go and have this fight.
Yeah, I'm going to be very brief because it's just a follow-up.
It's fine, Honorable, but we must have fight. One, two, it's a follow-up.
I want to start with the follow-up, and then I'll be the first one.
But then you'll be fed after the follow-up. One, two, three, Honorable. Four, I need to do that.
Follow-up.
Yeah, it's like they're mixed. These follow-ups come in, and so I'm giving them a chance. Thank
so can
you.
I...
Yeah.
Can I speak and then
please,
ask before
the
follow-up? Yeah, please. Allow the Honorable to speak. I know you're not very happy, we'll come to you. Thank you.
You can smile on me.
Thank you, Chairperson.
I said, Honorable, that you'll speak definitely. Allow him because he was serious.
No, you can allow him to speak first. It's all right.
Okay, now he's...
I thought I was the one to speak now. Yes. Allow him to speak. I'll come later, as long as you give me my time.
Thank you. Please allow me to be able to chair. So this time you will speak and he will speak, and we'll go to the next two. And we don't need confusion here. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Now, the one about the ECD is... can you please explain what is the model? You said 100 model grade R. What's the definition of the model? And particular, does this include a qualified teacher? Because I'm very interested in having that model. Does that include a qualified teacher in front of the grade R class? And the distinction I would like to make between a qualified teacher and a practitioner. Then, Chairperson, with regard to, yes, still on this, and why 100? Why not 900 for 100 for each province? I'm just asking the question. Then, with regard to the one on the youth, right at the back, youth development. You say there's a youth task team in your next steps. Now, I've noted you've spotted the involvement of the department very well in terms of the 10 top priorities which are in the plans of the Ministry of Planning. So my question then, you said build cohesive, caring and sustainable communities, but then you narrow it down to youth task team, which I can understand, but youth is only one structure, one group of the total community. So why have you now narrowed it down to youth only? Because I think there is this practice which were there in the past, where you have the church and other groups also supporting schools, which builds the whole community. And I think that is the community that we would like to see becoming involved in the education. Then the last question, Chairperson. I want to congratulate the department with all the plans. And the question that I now have is, although it has been indicated to some extent, is there a Yenza document? Yenza meaning do it. It's good to have the plan, right? Is there a document that now will say, look, this is the what we are going to do, this is the budget, this is the target date, this is the responsible person, and these are the sort of other monitoring and evaluation plans that we have. Because I would hate to see a situation where we do have the plans, like for instance in the OSD, to make all the plans and then at the end said, but we don't have the money. We are looking for 4 billion rand to implement the OSD. So if these plans needs to be put in operation, do you have the money? And if you don't have the money, can you find the money? Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, I'm sure they got that one. Honorable Kanyasa.
Thank you. I just want to start with the follow-up that I wanted to make and then come to the question. The follow-up is about, I think what Mr. Makubela raised about bringing schools together on the basis of some information, maybe like the chairperson has indicated, the numbers are very low and so on. But in doing that, I think we need to obviously take the issue of ownership into account. You know, many of the rural schools we know were built by communities. And in some places, you know, there were very good schools in one village and the other village wanted a school there just, you know, because they want to own a school. I'm just saying, while you do that, you shouldn't be creating a problem where you'll find communities now beginning to fight because obviously you will do this. One will lose, the other one will benefit, I mean, in terms of ownership. So I'm just indicating that we know in communities there is this element of ownership. That's why we have so many secondary schools. Some communities are very close to each other, but because of the element of ownership, you have so many schools. It's not really a question, it's just a comment about that. Now, my question comes to, I think it's bullet number 2 on strengthening the skills and human resource base. Actually, it's enhancement of safety infrastructure in schools. That's where I have some concerns. You see, if you think putting up a fence is solving a problem, I think you need to go deeper than that because you are simply reducing the number of entry points into the school. It's not really going to help much. You can reduce the number of entry points. The biggest thing is if you have a gate, what's going to happen at that gate? I think that's how I personally would see it. You know, we have a problem now. The phobias are increasing. We had xenophobia. Now we have another phobia here, appointment phobia, where a person will make an appointment with you to come and see you at such and such a time, and when he comes, he guns you down. We all know about what happened here very recently. And this is a serious matter where people begin to fear. If a stranger makes an appointment, what do I do? So the question of entry, to me, it's not that very important, but it is what happens at the gate. When a person comes to see the principal, what happens at the gate? If it is just a question of reducing the entry points, it doesn't help. What happens at the gate? I think this is linked to one question where somebody spoke about the South African Police Services, how they assist here. I think we need to think very, very seriously about this. And of course, another thing is the type of fence you put there. Maybe there will be a standard. We know what our people do. You put up a fence here, tomorrow there are 7 holes in the fence. So that doesn't help much. So I'm just worried about fencing being, you know, one way of reducing or making the place, you know, a safe environment. Not in all cases. Thank you.
Thank you, Comrade. Honorable Gina, I'm checking. We're supposed to be here up to 12:30, and I'll be unfair to Honorable Gina and Honorable Mashishi if I tell them to be brief. But I just want you to note that we have time limits here.
I will be brief, Chairperson.
Chairperson, we know that in South Africa we have a problem of math and science educators and also the production that we have on those two subjects mainly. Then I'm concerned, Chair, about your report that you got us to say we do have these bursaries that are awarded to educators, more especially for math and science, and we know very well that mostly in rural areas, that is where we have a great shortage. So I'm just suggesting us to say, what if it becomes one of the criteria in awarding the bursaries, just to say the people who will graduate from the bursaries that have been awarded, they go straight to those rural areas because it's difficult really to attract educators to go to those areas. So it, what if we make it a criteria exactly to say maybe for 2 or 3 years it might be some of part of EE community service that those educators who have benefited from those bursaries, they go to those rural areas for us to see the difference and to, for us to reap fruits from the bursaries that, the department is giving out to those educators. It's just a suggestion. Maybe it can be open for a discussion. Again, I think, Chairperson, there is a subject that is very much lacking behind, and you are not taking it seriously, like accounting. I'll make an example of KwaZulu-Natal, where there's been an assessment and evaluation that has been made, and it has been found that looking at the results for this year, the results are very bad for grade 12 in these three subjects, accounting, math, and science. June, it became more, it was worse, it just dropped. And that shows us an indication that we shouldn't await anything in December, if ever the results have been, looking at the trend of the results for this year. What is happening? There are interventions that are taking place, but at this time of the year, we don't see and we don't expect much to happen in those three subjects, more especially. So it's just a request that we know that math and science are these subjects that you are always talking about, but really we need to consider these other subjects. Accounting, I think, it's becoming a problem. There are no qualified educators from accounting, and really we don't get the results that we wish to get in those in that subject. Secondly, Chairperson, I think Honorable McCubbin has asked this question, but I didn't get the response of it, as to say, do we always say, does it always mean that a no-fee school translates to the poor performance of that school? Looking at what is being said here, that improve the performance in no-fee schools, is it always the case? Because really, as when you see this action that are being put here, there is always this conception as to say an office school always translates to a school that is not performing. Really, do we agree with that one? And lastly, Chairperson, when we talk of that youth development, there is a thing that talks of sports, improving sports, making sure that we provide the opportunities in every learner, to every learner in extramural activities or sports. I think again, we have been talking of these resource centers that are being one region, one resource center. And I think maybe we should play around even the idea of having these sports, the sports centers or sports fields, maybe in one water really, because as for now, when we look at the rural areas, our schools does not have these sports facilities. We can say it on paper, but it won't happen. There is nothing that they can play with. So what if maybe the department, in their planning, we make sure that at least one ward, one circuit, we do have this center where we can make sure that every school, every learner does benefit and is involved in the extramural activities. Lastly, I think I was a little bit covered, but on the issue of practitioners and educators of ECD, I think again, if we continue with these practitioners and these 3,000 rand stipends and whatever, we are not yet there to make sure that the level of education in the ECD is improved. Really, why don't we have educators, the qualified educators for ECD, for grade R learners, so that we can be sure that what is being offered there is up to a standard, really, rather than these practitioners, even the salaries that they're getting, they're within the school where the educators are earning their salaries, and they are there with their 3,000, even sometimes their 1 point, these stipends that they're getting. I think really we need to look at that issue and make sure that we put grade R class in the level of the whole school that we have. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Mashishi, we already have 12 questions from the three speakers. I'm waiting for you, Honorable Mashishi.
Thank you, Chairperson. And then I had the DDG was talking about attract appropriate, qualified, and competent teachers in all learning areas. My question is, what is happening now? Are we not having competent teachers now at this present moment? SEA is saying you're going to attract the appropriate, qualified, and competent teachers. And then, secondly, I just want to, whether this thing of the competent teachers, does it marry with that one of the grade 3, 6, and 9? Those competent teachers are going to be placed in, are we going to consider grade 3, 6, and 9? That's my question. And again, on that one of the safety schools, I was suggesting that maybe we do involve social workers to visit those schools, maybe to talk to the learners. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, we will get responses, I guess. But then, maybe briefly on the safe schools, we talk of partnership always. I think the social workers should be involved in a committee. Also, the schools are supposed to adopt a COP, and I think it was done in most circuits. Thank you. Over to you.
Chair, I'm going to ask Ms. Gaius to please answer because she has been due to put a mandate committee briefing with the minister.
Oh, okay. Over to you, ma'am.
Okay, thanks. The questions on the shortages of teachers against how we ensure they get into the areas that are most needed, the rural areas. Look, it's a very, very difficult one because I think we are attracting people from rural areas for the bursary. Now, the reason we are giving them the priority to get the bursary is because we are working on the assumption that they're going to go home and go teach there where they come from. And the problem is that when they now choose where they must apply, they are not applying where they come from. They are applying to stay in the urban areas. So the first thing we have to do is we have to mobilize communities to make these people to feel really needed, that they have a pride to want to go back. Even if you get into the big city, you have a sense of deep commitment to go back and actually change the lives of your community you come from. It's a consciousness you have to develop, so it's not an event, an end. It's a process that we have to develop. We can also look at the compulsion. You know, in the past, we did have, when you started out as a teacher, you went and taught in the deep rural areas. You had to be there. You know, you ended up liking that place and you stayed there forever, got married and had children there. So, yeah, we have to, but I think we have to make it in a way, before we get to that kind of compulsion, we have to make it easier than in the past. You know, we don't want to make people to suffer where they're going and make a sacrifice. So, there are ways of doing that, but it's coupled with the issues of incentives, you know, that if you're going really far, there's no proper housing facility there. Maybe we need to consider building hostels for teachers as well in deep rural areas. You know, maybe the incentive of if you are teaching in that hard to reach, we put some kind of a system that you can get to school easy, you know, because the roads is bad. And, you know, so it has to be coupled with incentives. Where we've devolved in society is not to go back to the past, but to take the lessons of what worked well. And we are exploring that. We thought that as a first option, we would give the rural community the chance to send people from there to come and get a bursary, but now it's not helping us, so we have to look at those measures. The issue about appropriately qualified teachers and what's happening now, you know that we have variations of qualifications within the teaching corps. What was once considered a qualified teacher is not today a qualified teacher. So we still have teachers who are unqualified and underqualified. They have a professional qualification, but they are not considered qualified. And these are not the worst teachers. They are actually often the best teachers.
you know, that have taught for many years and got a lot of experience. So our task in terms of those categories of teachers is to assist them to upgrade and become qualified teachers, and that process is in place on development plans. We've also looked at remuneration. The money that we are looking for on the OSD is to help those teachers to get them to also get remunerated at a level that they feel is worthwhile for to continue to teach. So we want to pay them on RQV 13 and not on RQV 10, 11 and 12, which is a smaller amount of money. The issue of the qualified and how that translates, especially to rural areas, you will find in particular in rural areas that you cannot find a qualified teacher in a particular subject area, like for instance maths. Now, no amount of trying to advertise that post is going to get you that teacher there. So we have to look at creative strategies, because it's not that you don't have sufficiently qualified teachers in a particular area. It's that they don't want to go into deep rural areas and go and teach. And again, it's issues of incentives, perhaps, that could lure them to go there. In the absence, we have to ensure that you get a teacher there. The trend has been that communities are taking, in some cases, even totally unqualified. A child that has just finished matric often is standing in the next year in front of the classroom teaching, because there's not a teacher that's willing to go out there and go and teach. Now, also again, how do you take that child that is showing a potential and an interest in teaching? Do you just throw that person aside and say you are not needed now when you get a qualified teacher? So we want to take that person as a teacher and train them, put them in a college and train them, and then put an interim teacher where we can maybe get foreign recruitment. So it's complex stuff, and we are looking at ways and means. We have not exhausted the opportunities and creativity, and you can help us to also, you know, answer the problem.
Thank you. Dr. Mohamed,
please. Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to add on to what my colleague has been saying regarding recruitment of educators in rural areas. Currently, there are discussions going on within the CM clusters, wherein CM has been divided into three clusters, and one of them is responsible for infrastructure and also rural development and rural education within rural areas and farm schools. There are initiatives that have been going on already to incentivize certain posts within rural areas in order to attract more educators from well-to-do areas into to go and teach in the rural areas. And then also in terms of our norms and standards for infrastructure provision, we have also factored in to say when we talk a complete school in a rural area or a farm school, that school should actually be, provision should be made for teachers' quarters like we used to have in the past. Now, that will in a way alleviate the problems of accommodation for teachers that will be coming from townships or from urban areas to go and teach in, I mean, attract them to go and teach into the rural areas. And also a provision of some transport facilities when they have to go to town and things like those. Those are the initiatives that we have, and discussions are going on. And also to involve other departments like the Human Settlement Department as to whether they cannot come in and assist with the provision of housing accommodation for educators within the rural school, so that we can be in a position to attract such educators. And then we also want to go into discussions with the Department of Correctional Services and the Department of Health, because they also are having centers or service points within rural areas, but they are able to attract the people into those areas, and also to get the best practices in terms of what we can learn from them, so that we can be able to attract the teachers of good quality in those areas. Now, there was a question again on whether you have a document that will be speaking to all the plans that you've put in here. Now, we have just circulated our strategic plans 2009 to 2013, which have got an annual operational plan. Now, in that operational plan, we have actually indicated how we are actually going to translate our strategic objectives into the activities that will be performed within this particular financial year, and then also providing indicators, providing again the budget which has been allocated to undertake such activities, which then says at the end of each and every quarter we report to the executive authority in terms of what we have done. And then at the end of the financial year, we are going to provide an annual report which goes again to Parliament and say this is what we have actually done in terms of our plans that we had. So there is a document that we will be addressing all these things. And the department actually, in terms of all the programs, will be reporting on a quarterly basis in terms of what they said they are going to do.
And see, I'm going to take the rest of the questions, and I'll cover them all. The one issue that was raised was around the youth task team, the reference there being to the intervention at 1.119 in the Programme of Action document. And the reason why that one was lifted out of the section, and it probably seems out of context, is that it's the only one relevant to the Department of Education, of basic education, in that particular action point. The rest are all attributed either to the Presidency or the National Youth Development Agency. So I think we must just remind ourselves that we've extracted the parts that are relevant to Department of Basic Education. And in this instance, there was a reference to the sport. So I think it's just a question. There was also the comment, which I think we can also just broadly support, it was a comment around ownership of schools. I think Ms. Gay also responded to that. It was also the issue around how we talk about social cohesion in the broader sense of the word, and the fact that yes, we don't disregard, I think, the interests of communities in being a factor in those schools, being altered in the form and possible location of the best and most optimal access to resources. I want to come back to the issue around the perception, and I don't want to be incorrect because of the answer. I was stating that there's a perception, a negative perception, incorrectly informed about no-fee schools being equal to poor quality schools. And we are certainly not, I mean, we would not embark on a strategy to broaden access to education and lower quality, at the same time. The issue here is very clearly that it seems it's a negative consequence almost of being called no-fee schools, that the public perception out there in some quarters, it's not a dominant one by any measure of means. I think it's that we are aware and we are concerned about that perception deepening, in that our attempts to address issues of poverty are being mistakenly and incorrectly quoted as a dropping of standards and compromising quality. We are saying that we need to ensure that there is a strong advocacy strategy developed to support government's broadening of access by supplying information around what is being offered at those schools. So it's about addressing the negative perception and not to say that that's our opinion. The issue of safety and infrastructure, I think we all agree that fencing is but one of the many issues that must be addressed. But it is a start, and it's what we set as a target for this particular financial year. As we said also earlier, that the provinces themselves have developed different strategies peculiar to the particular needs and instances in those provinces. We've also seen that, it's hardly sometimes the right thing to do, but very often we've seen electric fencing. I mean, in the Western Cape, we've had schools with electric fencing to address the issue of unlawful access to the premises. Whether that's ideal in an educational context can be debated, but certainly in terms of what the basic provisioning requirements are, is that each school must have a fence, and that is the set of targets that have been set for the field and for the provinces in terms of what they've identified for our structure. I'm not quite sure. I think we've covered all the other questions. Is there one more?
No, you have covered quite a number of questions that have been asked right now. But then I needed to indicate that recently the president called the principals to an inter-action session in Durban. Now we are still processing some of the inputs that we got from principals. And the issue of safety in schools came out very clear. And they are also, principals are also indicating that if they could have a security guard at school in order to control access. Now, I take it you understand the economic climate in which we are currently. If we have to have all the schools having this type of a strategy for security reasons. But we are just saying these are some of the things that the economic climate permitting, this is the area, I mean, this is the direction that we'll be moving into. And those schools that do have the leverage in terms of finances have already embarked on guard securities, and that's the area that we are looking at in order to control access into schools. And also the mobile, I think what we have at our disposal at the present moment is to mobilize our communities and also to have the forums in terms of involvement of subs within local or local areas in terms of the mobilization of key stakeholders around creating our schools to be centers of community involvement and even participation, wherein I think there are a number of areas around Gauteng wherein members of the communities have formed themselves into some guards overnight to patrol the areas, and the target areas which are patrolled most of the times are schools. Now, if that idea could be discussed and maybe taken forward in all the areas within the country, then at least maybe we can, for certain, say our resources will be safe in schools.
May I just add, there was one other question around grade R, whether it's qualified teachers or practitioners. I think earlier in my input, I also referred to the fact that the Department of Social Development runs with this particular part of the program of action. The identification and the provision of practitioners have been largely managed by the DSD. The Education Department's involvement is to provide the necessary training to those practitioners, but also in the instances of grade R attached to schools, those are fully qualified teachers, and in instances where they need to be upgraded, that would be addressed through the provincial processes. But certainly these are, as far as possible from the Education Department side, qualified practitioners, qualified educators at grade R level, and ongoing training of the practitioners identified in the process.
Yeah, thank you. I see Honorable Smile's hand is up. But what I wanted to say was that from the table, we've been trying to summarize our agreement, so the additions that we came with as the presentation was made. I wanted to give to Ms. Eliwele. But before I do that, I'll check with Honorable Smile.
Chairperson, thank you. On the grade R qualified teachers. And having noted what is happening in the community centers, if I may call it that way, is it possible for the department to make a ruling, if I may call it that way, to say when you have grade R in the community center, which is not in a public school for that matter, then we as education, because of the importance of foundation phase, we cannot allow you to have ordinary practitioners to look after grade R. They can do so, you know, the others. But for grade R, it must be a qualified sort of teacher. Is it possible for the department to make that kind of ruling? In the interest of education, it's not for anything else. To be smart, it's so important that you do the basics correct. Otherwise, you know, you may create a lot of other problems later on.
Can the department be smart?
The department has had a broad consultation at the Teacher Development Summit in July, where the issue of ECD practitioners vis-a-vis grade R educators was one of the items on the agenda. And I think that the department is also conscious of its management of the qualifications and the standard setting of educators in its own purview. But when it comes to another sister department, DSD,
we can advise, we can suggest through our qualifications process that this would be the ideal. But when there's a community school which has been largely under the auspices of the DSP, there obviously are areas where we can't directly manage and insist upon it. I think qualifications and standard setting is our business, and that was certainly came out of the teacher summit declaration. I think as far as possible through SAFE, the South African Council for Educators, the formal licensing, so to speak, of educators conforms to a set of criteria established there. And that would work cheek by jowl with what has come out of that summit in terms of identifying the baseline qualification for anybody sitting standing in front of a grade R class. So certainly in terms of issuing its desired standards for qualification, we would be guided by the SAFE process, and the Education Department will certainly go through that process and make sure that those standards are met.
Yeah.
But it is about a co-managed process at the moment in terms of the community
Honourable members, I note that we can speak the whole week. Actually, this is the topic, a topic which we are passionate about as educators and as parliamentarians. Such that I would request that unless if that will make some school disappear somewhere if we don't speak, we thank the Department of Education and check how far we have captured. I've seen only one hand, actually, and I want to believe that the hand will not come with a parliamentary speech, please. Dr. Klopas.
I'm not in there, I'm just making speech as a short question.
Thank you.
Regarding the safety in schools, you know, the action on a written letter from the DA, the minister indicated, was asked a question on safety and specifically safety budgets for safety. It indicated that only 6 of the 9 provinces budget for safety. What is your response to?
Simple one. I'm not going to challenge the information that the minister has brought, but we do know that the matter of safety is a concern that's raised at almost all of our HCOM meetings and all of the CMs. Whether the provinces and education departments there can do battle with Treasury about a clear line item called safety and security for schools, that becomes a provincial battleground. But the guidelines are set at the national level, the norms and standards are set for school infrastructure, and it's up to the provinces to implement those guideline policies. I think it's certainly, are you asking me to be brief? Sorry, Chair, I'm being intimidated by the chair.
Yes, not really. My apologies. I'm checking, it's like as you're speaking, another member wants to come in.
With a follow up.
And yeah, and we'll get a second chair very soon. Thanks. You speak.
Chair, I'm sorry, what I'm saying is that I will certainly follow up on it, but we can only account up to this point for for what provinces do. That information is sourced from our branches that manage the system of planning. So that information will be applied to the minister based on what they are.
You may just as well stay tuned for next for Honourable Mputana.
Very short, but it's linked to what she has just said. One thing to add is that, you know, under medium-term strategic framework, the document speaks about provinces submitting their strategic plans and budgets. Now, why say this at all if, or let me put it, once provinces submit this, what is the department, what are you going to do? Because in the years past, provinces have said 80% of their budget goes to personnel expenditure. But yet, they are expected to implement, they are implementing agencies of the national department. What is the process? What are we going to do with these plans when they've submitted them to you?
Yes, what are you going to do, department?
Quite simply, the department has to bow to the will also of the provinces, where the provincial treasuries make determinations at that point about allocations made to provinces. So when in the instance around conditional grants, etc., that's where the department is able to exercise some real intervention and oversight. But in real terms, those allocations are determined by in the provincial budgeting process. And we can only urge that at that level, all of those items can be attended to. There's no absolute uniformity in what provinces are doing, and that is what I think ultimately would be desirable, but we can't as a national department, other than through the process of managing and exercising oversight over and offering assistance to provincial CFOs of education departments and advise. But the prioritization and allocations happen at the direct level of government.
Yeah, thank you. Can we now get
the... Are you fine?
Yeah.
Okay, the table is fine. Yeah, let's hear what we have here. Before we thank the department.
Yeah, Chair, just quickly, and I'll ask if I may have missed something, Bandi, if you can maybe just help. But there was basically just three issues that the department, and this is what I needed to just notice, what they come back to us on for any responses, was the issue of the gym. The GMBM initiative and any documentation and information on that. The issue of the transport in those rural areas and the problems with the transport. And then the written responses on the matric distinction downgrading with that issue. And then just very lastly, while you were speaking with Carol, sir, I'm not sure whether you may say that you would come back to us on those provincial budgets, if I should add that to. Those are the only ones I could I picked up.
Therefore, are you still on? Because I see this... the mic is misleading me. Thank you very much. I want to thank the honorable members for their excellent participation, because for sure we are very serious about education in this country. And every person who participated have definitely made a difference. We thank you heartily from the chair. And the Department of Education, I want to believe that you prepared very much sincerely so. For this particular presentation, we want to thank you. And as parliamentarians, we definitely want to make sure that things go right down there. Mm-hmm. And we support. We believe that what you brought here will be enhanced by the questions and the additions that came from the members. And from the chair, I want to believe we've done a wonderful job for the day.
Yeah, he wants to say something.
Sorry, Chair, before you close, just on the other two issues on the agenda, they are in-house issues for the committee. Now, unfortunately, the Chair is not around today, so we would have dealt with it while she's here. Just quickly, that the one is the letter that Mr. Smiles had submitted to the committee, requesting the hearings on this. That issue, I think, will have to stand until the Chairperson is available next week. And then the other big one is that we have, this is a very draft, it's a draft 5-year plan of the committee. I'm not sure, we want to discuss it now, but each member has a copy thereof. We have a deadline for submitting this 5-year plan. And I think between myself and the content advisor, and I'll also run it by the chairperson, is that we're going to try, as you have a copy of this, that you would go through it, and we will probably give you until, say, noon on Thursday. To come back to either myself or Bundy, Dennis Bundy, who is the content advisor, on any issues that you might want to add or seek clarity on, so that there's a possibility that by noon on Thursday, whatever we receive, we accept that members are fine with it, and I suppose then we'll take it from there to have the chairperson maybe sign off on it. That's the only issue I have.
Yeah, I request a week. I wanted to go back to them to check if we can have stand over for this tour, and if you have something to say about this too, so that we can.
Yeah, so actually I have some comments on the document. I don't know if it was going to be open for discussion or what, but I have a bit of concern. There are no specifics. For example, you speak about an international trip in some developing country. I think that a strategic document should have specifics that is informed by what we are doing. Just for example, if you are to do an oversight, what is it that you want to achieve with it? Because that should inform in terms of what the work that you are doing. So I just felt that there's so much detail that is not there, that is not able to guide us at all.
Yeah, let me see while you're speaking. Because I think the department must be allowed to leave. So that's okay. Because otherwise, there. Yeah, so that we can continue. If it's okay with you, we will come back to you. I just want to, because we thank you. And there is something, there was something the last time I checked on the table. Before you leave, can you grab something, the department? Thanks. DJ, thank you. And then, and if we can take something like 4 minutes to allow them to, and then we'll continue. Is that fine? Thank you.
So that I also get a break.
from Robert. Next time, you want to say, I'm from the kingdom of Lumpur. What's that?
Yeah, from the kingdom of Lumpur.
Yeah, what's that?
I'm checking with Honorable Kubai if we can. Are you on the phone? I think we'll wait for you. It's fine. I wanted to check with you, Honorable Kubai, if we can ask Mr. Banda to respond, unless if you were still. You are not yet done. Okay. So, over to you.
Thanks, Chet. Yeah, as I raised some couple of things, but one concern I have is for things to be written and submitted, because those don't become a committee resolution issues. They become an individual. Because you might submit something, I might submit something that perhaps Dr. Smiles does not agree with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then it becomes an issue because it comes mm-hmm. into the program.
Mm-hmm.
Or Mr. Smiles. Then it becomes part of the program. It's a bit of a challenge if we're going to approach it that way, especially a program. I would prefer that a program is discussed and agreed upon. Anything that goes into the program is something that all of us can own up. So that we don't end up saying that I have no clue what is that, it belongs to so and so. So it's a bit of a challenge to have a program approach the way Mr. Brown was giving it. I really have a problem with it that way. I think we should start there to agree in terms of processing. It's unfortunate that this comes now when there's a tight deadline. I think it would have been better if we were it was circulated, we have it, and today we are able to discuss it and close on it, so that the submission is an incorporation of what we have agreed upon. The site submissions, I'm quite one of the people who do not agree with the site submissions, quite honestly. I think that any submission, I think even last time we did the same way, and I would really appeal to Mr. Brown that if we can just ensure that if there are things that we need to approve as a committee, let them come to the committee, let us discuss them and close on them. I don't agree with the approach of things submitted sideways without us engaging as a committee and having a full ownership of them.
Yeah, I want to agree with Honorable Kubai, but then we need to check with the time frames. I'm not sure if they write, they give us time frames if somebody wants to use the venue or what, because it's now 12:30, and according to this agenda, we should be getting out of here. But if we don't have problems with this, I'm told 15 minutes, maybe if we can come in and entertain what Honorable Kubai was saying. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the issue, perhaps before responding, I think we accept your concern. We'll consider it. On the issue of international study towers, there are a few possible countries that we could consider. However, at this stage, we'll ask members to possibly assist us here. If we could work with a broad principle of whether or not we should visit one international country and another country in Africa. If we could possibly consider that principle,
and if we accept it, then we could look at possible countries. Some of the key issues that might guide us on which country to visit are issues of quality in basic education, which, as we know, has been a critical area of concern. And then infrastructure, how to address infrastructure. And then the area of teacher supply, utilization and development. There are countries that we could consider. So perhaps if members agree, we could sort of work with a tentative principle of considering one international country and one African country.
Yeah, we have had that input. Can I come back to the members then for interaction? I'll start with Honorable Makubele. Sorry. because Honorable Makubele's hand went first, so I was trying to favor you and the mouth couldn't do that. So we'll start with Honorable Makubele and then Honorable Kubai will follow. Honorable Smile, have I seen your hand up as well?
No, I was just teasing her. I asked whether she's an item with the Honorable Makubele, that's why. The two of them are an item.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much. So it's going to be Makubele first and then you. Thank you.
I think Honorable Smiles is not suggesting anything. Okay. I was interested on the first part of the process, but I thought we may not be able to arrive at a clear thing if we don't know exactly when is the deadline of submission. So if we were to be told we could look at possibilities of meeting again as a committee, and when could that be? Because I think that's important, and it's all I thought we needed to agree on. And then members were going to have some opportunity to go through the document, have their own input, even if they were to forward those inputs, but still come here and be able to discuss. Now, you'll be able to see, having received some submissions, these are the issues that seem to be there. Having been somewhat consolidated, but then it can be a consolidated document which has never been seen. You know, we'll then be able to ratify that in a meeting of this nature, and then that will be submitted, you know, later on.
Okay. Honorable Kubai, before we get responses.
Yeah, it's a bit difficult from where I'm sitting. Whether are we discussing what I have already, or we are discussing the document? Need clarity on that one.
Actually, the understanding that we're having here is that members are not happy with submitting things that did not come via the committee, which means this is the time, because it's like was somebody's talking of Thursday. We have commitment, I think, unless if we can say we can meet some other day, or if we can wait for, I don't know when the chairperson is coming back, but I think because we're here, maybe we should propose. That's what I was thinking. Thank you.
In that regard, I'll proceed, Chair. The first thing is on conducting oversight. So for me, it's page 7. It's quite broad. Consider educational issues in the State of the Nation address. And it says February ongoing, meaning that next year. I just wanted to check, maybe if we can be assisted. There are things that the President committed to this during the State of the Nation address this year. When is that going to be happening? Are we not incorporating that? But again, I think that it needs to be specific. We can't just be broad like that. If we are to state what is it that we want to achieve out of that, at least let it be specific on that, but again, just clarity on this year, State of the Nation address, the non-negotiables, the commitment on laptops. I think that we need to conduct an oversight or somehow evaluation of the things that the President has committed to. Secondly, on the issue of the international trips, I think that for me, what would assist is to have a broader view, because I looked at this, it just says that training and empowerment of committee members, workshop, study tour, international job. There isn't a principle when we are to conduct an international tour, what is the principle around that? What area of focus are we going to, so that we are able to identify countries? You might have countries that excel in a specific area of education, but if we are to say we are going to conduct an international study tour based on evaluating the quality of education or curriculum, therefore, in that sense, we'll be able to start impacting on that input as members to say, this is the country that we think is best in terms of curriculum that is taking the shape of South Africa. But being vague like this, I have a problem with it, because I don't understand what we are hoping to achieve with that study tour. So for me, it would need some more of, even if you don't say the country itself, but the principle of what you are hoping to achieve on that one. The same way, facilitate international participation in international forums. Do we know what international forums exist currently? Are we still going to search for them? Because if things are vague like this, ourselves, how do we monitor the progress that we've made as a committee in implementing what we have termed as our own five-year program? So that's why I have a bit of a challenge, actually, with the entire document. If it can be enhanced to the level that it has details that we are able to say, this is what we are going to do specifically, so that we are able to evaluate it. Behaving a very vague and general document for me is a bit of a challenge and a bit of a problem. Thanks.
Can we then agree? I'm listening to what the honourable members, the two honourable members said. Can we agree, if there is still time, to say, let's send this document back so that it comes back with the principles that informed the decisions taken here? Because I want to believe the honourable is coming with a valid point. Unless if we say we want to do it now, we might not do a good job. So I wanted to propose that, okay, let's send this document back, because we are giving them guidelines and continue to receive, if there are more guidelines, because they only came from the two members, what else do we want to add so that when the document comes, we'll be able to interact with it? If this is okay, I see members responding. I see Kubai first, and then you'll come in, Dr.
Proposing a way forward. I understand Llewellyn said the submission of this document is Friday. If they can consolidate, is it okay? Yeah. I thought it's Friday. You're saying it's Friday, this Friday? Let's clarify.
Yes, the official date is the 18th. Yeah. Okay. But I thought that we could, I don't know whether it would be possible for us to get an extension.
I think in light of that, check if you can get an extension. If not, please, after amending the document, if it can be circulated to us, we get it either in our pigeonholes or through email, that we are able to look at it before you submit on Friday. I would love to look at it before submission, if you are to submit it on Friday. But if not, if there's still opportunity, I would appreciate it if it can come back to the committee on Tuesday next week. Thanks.
Yeah, I want to understand that as closing remarks on this particular issue, except that I wanted her to come in first. Are you happy?
I'm happy
with you. Yeah. So as the committee, we agree, so that when you respond, Mr. Bande, you understand that we agree that you have done a wonderful job here, but we say it needs more. We want to know what informed the chosen places, especially on the visit, and so that when we can get it, if it can be placed in our pigeonholes, so that we'll be able to go through it and another meeting of the committee, can be, yeah, I think we need that. I think that's what we need. Over to you.
Thank you once more, Chairperson. On the issue of conducting oversight, we will invite members, honourable members, to submit any items that they think have not been covered here. When we sort of developed these items, when we came up with these items, we took into account the State of the Nation address. Interestingly, as honourable Kubai spoke, we realized that there are one or two items that we could have omitted. So basically what I'm trying to do is to urge members to identify any other item
that we may not have been able to cover, and perhaps bring it to the next meeting. And then, sorry, the last point, the first aspect, the first activity under strategic objective number two, the one of conducting oversight, bullet one, it says consider education issues in the state of the nation address. This is an ongoing item that only happens in February. As to the specifics of the SONA, these are listed under the operational plan items at something. Thank you.
Honorable Kubai, I guess you are answered, because every February this is what happens and it's ongoing. Immediately after the state of the nation, this happens. Are you satisfied with that? Okay. Then we agree that we have come to the end of this particular, unless if I'm leaving something. First, that we'll be submitting, because they are pleading that if there are items that members believe we inform them more, we can do that. And if there is another meeting that will come, for sure they'll speak to us. Can I then declare this meeting? People like to say adjourn here in Parliament. My understanding is that if you adjourn, it means you are going to continue. So I want to use the old terminology of saying this one is closed. Thank you. Corrections, I adjourn until the end of 5 years, right? I adjourn.
Thank you. Oh, no. Thank you. Very nice. When you said I have time, I'm going to go to the next one.